Good evening. Thank you for coming to this lecture. I hope it's not going to be boring. And thank you for the introduction. I don't know why it happens, but every time people refer to my past diplomatic experience, they mention Bosnia, but they never mention Montenegro, which was much more challenging for me, actually, because in Bosnia I was running an institution, but in Montenegro all I had was Javier Solana's instruction: go there and make sure it's legitimate and objective for the referendum. Yes. And ask him who should win. No, it's up to you. I want this process not to be questioned afterwards. So it's good to be back at the LSE. I was here some 4 years ago in my then capacity of the High Representative, and we discussed Bosnia and Herzegovina. It was interesting. I'm visiting London in my current national capacity. The formal reason for this visit is to celebrate 20 years since Slovakia was born and 20 years since we established diplomatic relations with the United Kingdom, and to look back and be proud of what we have achieved together. And it's good that today Slovakia and the UK are not discussing primarily our bilateral relations, but we are discussing what we can do together to make the world a better place. It sounds like cliche, but it's not. And in all my meetings, including with my partner, Minister William Hague, the major part of our discussion was dedicated to your European Union. And you are not surprised. This is an issue that is both the internal politics and foreign policy, and this is the issue that keeps us very busy and very preoccupied, and the UK has contributed to this busyness with the recent speech of the Prime Minister Cameron. So I came here to offer you views on the European Union as seen not only from Slovakia but from Central Europe, because the fact is that due to our historical experience, the views on these issues and on many other issues are very much shared by the Slovaks and Czechs and Poles and the Hungarians and the others. So, and of course we are discussing all these issues very actively, and therefore I don't have a formal mandate to speak on behalf of the Visegrad 4, but I can tell you, and you can trust me, that I'm bringing sort of Central European view. For us, in our part of the world that has experienced both fascism and communism, the values of freedom and democracy are not just slogans, but they really matter. And believe me that the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia was not about common market, but it was about becoming part of the free and democratic world. And this is why when we were given the perspective to become part of the European Union, which is exactly built on these values, this was a very strong encouragement for us, and this made us enthusiastic, and this helped us to be successful in our transition. For us, this is not an accomplished process. For us, this is not the deal done. We know that you have to fight for democracy, you have to protect democracy, particularly when we are going through difficult times, as it is the case now. So therefore, for us, European Union is an embodiment of democracy and freedom, and we want it to stay this way. Plus, we still see new challenges. The first one, of course, not to let it go again. Just to make sure that European Union stays as attractive as it always was, that it's dynamic, it's successful, and we have to do our part. And secondly, to offer this European perspective to those who deserve it and to those who qualify for it. So I'm referring first and foremost now to the countries of the Western Balkans, of course. Now, European Union is not going through the easiest of times, as we all know. We have many forms of crisis: economic crisis, currency crisis, financial crisis. But here I would like to say that for us, as we see it, it's mostly the crisis of confidence. We lost the confidence of markets. We lost the confidence of our citizens. They don't trust us that we have the ability to cope with the challenges we are facing. So we need to regain the confidence in order to be able to deal with all the aspects of this crisis. And to do so, there is no perfect standalone solution that can be found overnight. It is a process. It's a process consisting of a number of steps, and we have to be sure that we are progressing in the right direction. Is it the case now or not? There is no clear answer. I believe it is. I do believe that we have already adopted a number of measures that are leading us in the right direction. European Stability Mechanism, the Fiscal Compact, the Compact for Growth and Jobs, all these elements are here already. We are working to get us closer to the banking union. We are speaking about the fiscal union, about the economic union, about political union. So we have the direction, we go in that direction. What is important here is not the number of pieces of legislation we are adopting, but how consistent and how serious are we going to be in implementing them. Because we are not, European Union has not been born 3 years ago when the crisis started. And we have had the Stability and Growth Pact before, but this has been violated more than 60 times with no consequences. Or actually, the consequence which we are facing now is the crisis we have to deal with now. So we must show we are serious in accepting and implementing the rules we have adopted. Without this, we will have no chance to be successful. So we are good at setting rules for the others, but we must also respect the rules that we have set for ourselves. In this regard, I would say that the multi-annual financial framework, the new budget for the next 7 years that was adopted last week, was a step in a good direction, because we show that we have the ability to make decisions. We even have the ability to deliver this decision in time. The decisions that go right way, because these are the decisions that are supposed to start growth, which is what we all need. And we can even break taboos, because for the first time we went down with our budget, and we succeeded doing so, because there was a will and there was an ability to reach a consensus. If we want to make European Union stronger, we have to understand that we have to start our work at home. Everything is interconnected in Europe. There are no isolated problems. No matter whether you are in the Eurozone or outside of the Eurozone, whether you have opt-ins and opt-outs, everything we do affects the others. So, and therefore, logically, if we want to find solutions for the overall European Union, we have to find them in our discussion among all the member states. There is no individual solution to our common problems. European Union is our own project. It has not been imposed upon us. And therefore, all the solutions, again, depend on us. So it makes no sense to cry or to ask ourselves rhetorically whether Euro will survive, whether the European Union will survive. It's our project. If we want it to survive, it will survive. We have all the instruments, we have all the political will, and there is no obstacle to us, other than within us. So, but of course, all these solutions have to be a result of a proper discussion. There must be no blackmail, there must be no my way or highway. It really has to be a very serious engagement in a serious discussion. We have a number of examples of this discussion going on. Van Rompuy's four pillars, Barroso's blueprint, UK's balance of competences review, or in Slovakia we are relaunching the project of National Convention, which is a nationwide platform for thorough discussion about European Union and about all the challenges it's facing. So it's good that we are discussing all this. Because, as I said, it is a very complex process, and we have to make sure that we are not throwing out the baby together with the bathwater. That's really important. The process must be based on facts and not on prejudices or on myth. And here I want to recall the speech that my dear friend, Polish Foreign Minister Radek Sikorski, delivered in this great country a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure that you are familiar with this speech. I'm not going to repeat what he said, but I think he has done a very good job in dismissing a number of myths about the European Union that exist here and in other places. There is no doubt that the European Union needs more competitiveness, and not only in terms of economy, but also in terms of security and in terms of foreign policy. We are facing challenges of the 21st century, and we have to be equipped for that. We have to find a proper balance between austerity and growth. And it's as simple as to square the circle, but there is no other way. We have to do it. We have to be able to redirect our European money, European funds, so that we help those countries and those regions that need it most, and that, again, would stimulate growth rather than to be just spent and eaten. And we definitely need to use the full potential of the European single market. which is here, but we are just not using it to the full extent. The signal about adapting our budget is a positive one, and it should help us and to calm down the situation, to help us, to get us to understand where we are, what is at our disposal, and to focus on other issues. And at the same time, we must not forget that the European Union has the ambition, and rightly so, to be a global player. We have a global role, we have a global responsibility. And here, I'm asking myself quite often, and I'm being asked quite often whenever I'm traveling outside of the European Union, why is Europe so much obsessed and preoccupied with itself? Why are we looking so much inwards rather than trying to assess our role and our responsibility globally? Why we don't pay enough attention to the world beyond the borders of the European Union? So I think it's a proper question, which also needs to be asked more frequently, and probably we all need to travel outside of the EU more often. We need to bring the European Union closer to our citizens. And that's the only thing we can do if we want Europe to be successful. And for this, we need more subsidiarity, more delegation of power, which should work both ways. More Europe whenever we know that it's good that Europe is responsible for certain functions. But whenever we know that it's the member state who can cope easily with the issues and good quality, then we should give the powers back to the member states. So more Europe does not mean more regulations. More Europe means stronger Europe. And we need more democratic legitimacy. And by saying so, I'm not questioning the legitimate credentials of our elected leaders who are making or adopting decisions at European Council, nor am I questioning the democratic mandate of the European Parliament. But I do believe that we are doing a lousy job in communicating European agenda to our citizens. We don't do this enough, and we don't do this in a way that people can understand it. Our leaders meet, they spend hours and hours without sleeping to arrive at certain result, and no one has the ability to understand what has been agreed, because it has been turned into a document which is impossible to comprehend. So we really need, we will not succeed if our citizens don't understand what we do and why we do. And this is what we call democratic legitimacy. So our public simply must be informed, must know where are we heading, and we have to have the feedback from our citizens that they agree with what we do. Sometimes we tend to go too far in certain directions and taking the risk of losing our citizens. So as I said, we need more Europe, but we also need a better Europe. And as I said, more Europe does not mean more regulations, but it means stronger Europe. We need more accountability. Accountability at the EU level, at the national level, and also at the corporate level, because the banks have done their share of responsibilities for the problems we are facing right now. We need more responsibility in the management of public finances. It's not possible for Europe to be divided into the group of countries who are responsible in managing the finances and those who are not necessarily. We need more enforcement of agreed rules. We need more coordination, and we need more information sharing, because we are members of a prominent club, and every member of the club has the right to know what the others are doing. So the full transparency is a prerequisite, precondition for a success. And of course, as I said at the beginning, we need more confidence from our markets, which will, of course, derive from the actions we are undertaking. And in the wider context, we need more member states. As I said, there is an unfinished business when it comes to the countries of the Western Balkans, but it does not mean that we have to extend European Union in a way of a gift, of a free ticket, but it should be a logical consequence of meeting all the conditions and all the criteria. We need more free trade. We have right now on the table a number of proposals for free trade agreements with the United States, with Japan, with India, with Latin American countries, with ASEAN countries, but also with Ukraine or with the countries of Eastern Partnership. Europe needs more free trade. And this is also an area where we are not using our potential. We need more EU influence and leverage globally. And we need more security. So with all these examples, I'm trying to prove that when we say more, it's not necessarily a bad thing. We need more in all the areas where we agree that it's good for us. And as I said, we go for less when we also agree, all of us, that no regulation at the EU level is necessary and needed. And let me stress once again the point that the evaluation about what is good and what's not must be done at the level of all the EU member states. Because we have a union of 27, soon to be 28 member states. We don't have European Union which is based on bilateral arrangements between each of us and Brussels. And I don't see this kind of union being able to survive and being attractive for our citizens. So if we want to achieve what we want, we have to discuss it among ourselves first. Then there is the famous issue of flexible geometry, and which is also being, or the double-speed Europe or multi-tire Europe. When you ask me about our opinion, we would say this is not the most preferred solution, but it's probably the second best option. And it is a reality already. We have Schengen, we have Eurozone, we have opt-outs, several countries, several issues. So this is a reality. We have been able to live with it, so we shall not be questioning it. But it's important that we have a core group, a center of gravity, that is trying to set the agenda. It's important that, in other words, those who are the least enthusiastic should not dictate the speed for the rest. With this approach, we won't be able to compete globally. Those who decided to stay out of this or that arrangement must not have the right to block those who are in. But those who are in must not depart too far away from those who are out, because this should not be seen as an eternal solution. So that means if I'm not able or not willing to join Schengen or Euro, but my wish to do so in 5 years' time, I still must have the chance of doing so. That means that core group must not depart too far away and must keep the process inclusive. That's very important here. I already alluded to it a number of times. I want to say very clearly that we are very much interested in the UK staying in the European Union and being as strong and as visible member of the European Union as it has been by now. European Union needs UK because UK has been advocating for a number of core principles on which the European Union is based. UK has always been pro-market and pro-trade and pro-economy, and therefore this voice is needed for the European Union. But I'm equally convinced that it's in UK's interest to stay in the European Union. And I really hope that the process that has started with the Prime Minister's speech and that will continue up until the elections and then until the referendum will produce a number of sound, solid voices in favor or proving that the membership is in favor of the UK. And of course, by then, we also have to make sure that the concerns UK is having with regard of the ways EU functions will be addressed. And we are ready to do so, because as I said, we share a number of these concerns. Now, as I said, we must not resign on our role to play or to have a leverage and to influence the developments outside of the European Union, and particularly in our neighborhood. There are countries where European agenda is the dominant agenda. These are the countries of the Western Balkans. And I could hardly imagine number of positive things that is happening there that would be taking place if there was not for the European perspective. I don't think there is a single person in this room who would believe that President Nikolic would meet with President Yahyaga if it was not for the benefit of his country's European perspective. And that's a great thing. So this is what we have to do. We have to set clear rules, and we have to evaluate to what extent these rules have been met or not, and to allow the countries to progress. No political calendars, no personal considerations, conditionality, and when this conditionality is met, then the reward must follow. But then there are also countries which are our neighbors to the east and to the south, Southern Mediterranean, Eastern Partnership. Again, it is in our interest that these countries are as much like us as possible. We are not offering a membership in the European Union to Moldova or to Ukraine, but isn't it in our interest that their political system, their judicial system, their legal system, their economic system is as compatible with us as possible? Sure it is. And it will not happen by itself. So we have to offer incentives. We have to exercise our leverage on these countries to make this option attractive, because it's not painless. Eastern Partnership Program has not defined the EU membership in the European Union as its end game, but it left this issue open and ambiguous. So what we are saying to our partners is, it depends on you. It depends on what you make out of it. We are ready to support you, but we are not going to push you into this. So, to conclude, I'm watching time. I would make a couple of points. First one is that the European Union is what the member states make out of it. Second, the prerequisite of successful cooperation is the respect for existing rules of the game. Third, as the members of the club, we have to behave responsibly. As I said, everything in Europe is interconnected, and our actions influence the others. Four, we know how important solidarity in Europe is. Europe is built on solidarity, but solidarity must go hand in hand with responsibility. We shall not ask for solidarity if we have not been responsible towards our own commitments and towards our own partners. Only those who are responsible with their homework can ask for solidarity and for assistance from the others. This is how we see it in Slovakia. Point number five, there are no rights without duties. So EU membership is not cherry picking. There are elements of it which we might not like, but they are a result of our consensus, of our common agreement, and we have to respect them. And we can only change them if everybody else is on board again. Point number six, doing your own homework is the axiom. So it's really important, and it goes equally for the current member states as well as for the future member states. It's about the substance, it's about the reforms, it's about the work you do. Point number seven is determination. There are difficult and different periods in the history of different countries, and I like to say that European Union is an organism rather than a mechanism. We also have different concerns and different priorities in different times, but you have to show determination and you have to be focused on meeting the benchmarks, and the result will come. But you cannot play both sides. You cannot be both with and without, pro and contra. No, so you have to show very clearly that you know where your priorities lie. And it goes particularly for the countries who aspire to become member states of the European Union. My point number eight says that regional cooperation matters. It has been extremely well proved by the case of the Visegrad 4. And we are encouraging strongly the regional cooperation also for the countries of the Western Balkans. European Union works as an alliance of interests which are not against each other, but in favor of each other. But there is always good to be part of a wider group. And of course, you cannot be a good member of a European community if you have problems to communicate with your partners who are next to you. And my last point is, and I'm absolutely convinced that there is no better alternative than the membership in the European Union today. And I would quote again my friend Radek Sikorski, who says, if you are not at the table, be sure you are on the menu. So it's much better to be at the table. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your attention. I hope you disagree with many things I said, so it will provide us for a very lively discussion. Thank you very much once again.